I wanted to talk briefly about my second list, which is of the common causes of a regular SVT, that is supraventricular tachycardia. My first list is about the causes of a regular WCT, that is wide-complex tachycardia, when there are no sinus P waves. That list is simple, because the answer is VT, 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 or ventricular tachycardia, until you prove otherwise. I put four entities into my list for the common causes of a regular SVT, or narrow complex tachycardia. My reason for making this list is to help expedite clinical decision-making. Let's describe the process. Your patient presents with palpitations and a fast rhythm. The first thing to do is the first thing you do for assessment of any patient who presents in a tachycardia. Determine if the patient is hemodynamically stable. This is because if your patient in a tachycardia is unstable because of the fast rate, then it no longer matters what the rhythm is, because immediate cardioversion is indicated regardless of the etiology of the rhythm. I'll emphasize that unlike the case with wide tachycardias, in which many of those patients will be obviously unstable, most patients with a regular SVT, that is regular narrow complex tachycardia, most of these patients with regular SVT rhythms will not be so unstable as to require immediate cardioversion. There are, of course, exceptions, such as a very fast ventricular response in an older adult with marginal left ventricular function who is markedly hypotensive because the fast rate further reduces the time for diastolic filling, but most patients with a regular SVT will not need immediate cardioversion. Caveat, what I am not talking about is the patient with sinus tachycardia who is hypotensive because of some other reason, such as blood loss or marked dehydration. In that case, hemodynamic instability is not due to the fast rate. Instead, it's due to some other cause that needs to be corrected as soon as possible. Synchronized cardioversion of a sinus tachycardia that is compensating for hypovolemia or acute blood loss can be a lethal mistake, since this eliminates the sinus tachycardia that was the patient's only way to make up for the low cardiac output. Getting back to your patient with tachycardia. You've ensured that the patient is hemodynamically stable. The QRS is narrow, so you know that the rhythm is supraventricular. The rhythm is regular, so you are not dealing with atrial fibrillation. You don't see P waves. Perhaps you cannot tell if P waves or other sign of atrial activity might be hiding, that is, falling within the T wave or within the QRS complex, but there are no clear-cut P waves. So what have you described? What you've described is a regular SVT rhythm without clear sign of sinus P waves. The point that I want to make is that you should be able to arrive at this assessment within seconds. All it should take is a quick initial look at the patient to determine if the patient is hemodynamically stable. If not, then cardiovert. But if the patient does not need immediate cardioversion, apply the P's, Q's, and 3R approach to define the rhythm, looking for P waves, QRS width, and the 3Rs to determine the rate, to see if the rhythm is regular, and to see if any atrial activity you find is related or not to neighboring QRS complexes. If after applying the P's, Q's, 3R approach, you find that you have a regular SVT rhythm without clear sign of atrial activity, then for practical purposes, you are dealing with one of four entities. So the purpose of this list is to allow you to know within seconds that the regular SVT rhythm you are looking at is almost certain to be either sinus tachycardia, or atrial flutter, or a reentry SVT rhythm, or atrial tachycardia. And although there are other causes of a regular SVT rhythm in which sinus P waves are not clearly seen, such as junctional tachycardia or sinus node reentry, these other causes are not common. So for practical purposes, you can pretty much focus on this list for the four key causes of a regular SVT rhythm, which are sinus tach, a flutter, a reentry SVT rhythm, and atrial tachycardia. Of these four key causes, I've found atrial tachycardia to be the least common, especially as a cause of a strictly regular SVT rhythm in which you don't see atrial activity. That's because, in my experience with atrial tachycardia, you'll often see some irregularity in the rhythm, often with group beating, because atrial tachycardia very commonly manifests Wankybach conduction, with groups of beats separated by relative pauses. A pearl when assessing tachycardias that are punctuated by occasional pauses is to look closely at those pauses, as this is the place in the rhythm where you will often see telltale atrial activity that had been hidden within the ST segment and T wave prior to the pause. So most of the time, if the rhythm is atrial tachycardia, you'll see group beating from intermittent Winkie-Bach conduction, and you'll see telltale P waves at various points in the tracing. But for completeness, it's good to include atrial tachycardia in your list of the four causes to consider when contemplating the etiology of a regular SVT rhythm. This leaves us with three main entities to consider when your patient presents with a regular SVT rhythm without clear sign of sinus P waves. And these three causes are sinus tach, in which the sinus P waves are hidden within the preceding ST segment, atrial flutter, and a reentry SVT rhythm. My next pearl is that the rate of the regular SVT rhythm can help. In a supine patient, that is a patient who has not just run a 100-yard dash, sinus tachycardia usually does not exceed 160 to 170 per minute or so in adults. This is not to say that it is impossible to see sinus tach in adults at rates faster than this, because you can. But most of the time, if your patient with a regular SVT is an adult, then if the heart rate is above 170 per minute or so, then it is unlikely that the rhythm will be sinus tachycardia. Note, all bets are off in children who may manifest sinus tachycardia rates of 200 per minute or faster. Knowing the heart rate can also help determine the likelihood of untreated atrial flutter. By untreated, I mean atrial flutter for which the patient is not on a medication that may affect the heart rate. This is because the atrial rate of flutter in an untreated adult is almost always close to 300 per minute, with the usual range for the atrial rate of flutter being between 250 to 350 per minute. Since the most common ventricular response with aflutter is with 2 to 1 AV conduction, this means that new aflutter in an untreated patient will almost always manifest a ventricular rate that is close to 300 divided by 2 or 150 per minute. Note, by far, in my experience, the most common overlooked arrhythmia diagnosis is atrial flutter. The reason for this is that flutter waves are often subtle and hidden within the QRS complex or within the ST segment or T waves. As a result, when you see a regular SVT rhythm without clear sign of atrial activity with a ventricular rate that is close to 150 per minute, that is, within the range of 130 to 160 per minute or so, think atrial flutter until proven otherwise. So, to synthesize what I've said about the rate of a regular SVT rhythm without clear sign of atrial activity, if the rate is close to 150 per minute, then any of the entities on our list could be present, including sinus tach, atrial flutter, or a reentry SVT. But if the ventricular rate of your regular SVT rhythm is clearly faster than 170 to 180 per minute or so in an adult, this is probably too fast to be sinus tachycardia. It is also the wrong rate for untreated atrial flutter because 180 or more times 2 would result in an atrial rate for flutter clearly above the usual 250 to 350 per minute range, which means that by the process of elimination, this regular SVT rhythm at 180 or more per minute is almost certain to be a reentry SVT. The two main types of reentry SVT rhythms are AV-NRT, AV nodal reentry tachycardia, in which the reentry circuit is entirely contained within the AV node, or orthodromic AVRT, AV reciprocating tachycardia, in which the reentry occurs by passage in the forward direction down an accessory pathway, before being conducted back to the atria via retrograde conduction over the normal AV nodal pathway. I'll emphasize that for practical purposes of initial management, it doesn't matter whether the reentry SVT rhythm you are dealing with is AV-NRT or AV-RT, since both are treated the same in an emergency situation. I'll make a few final points before closing. There have been times when I've strongly suspected that the cause of a regular SVT rhythm was sinus tachycardia, but I was unable to prove this because I could not clearly see sinus P waves that were hidden within the preceding ST segment. The pearl to remember is that the rate of sinus tach will change as the patient's underlying condition that is causing the sinus tach either improves or worsens. So as the patient gets better, the heart rate will usually slow, and at a slower heart rate, you'll usually then be able to see the sinus P waves. In contrast, the ventricular rate for SVT rhythms due to atrial flutter or a reentry SVT will usually not change if no antiarrhythmic drug has been given. Beyond the scope of this basic audio pearl are more sophisticated means for seeking out atrial activity that I discuss in detail on other blog posts. But I'll finish by saying that even if you are uncertain about whether your regular SVT rhythm is atrial flutter, atrial tachycardia, or a reentry SVT, initial management, be this with a vagal maneuver to momentarily try to slow down the ventricular response, or with adenosine or other AV nodal blocking agent, initial management is similar. So you do not need to be certain of the etiology of the SVT before you begin to treat. Most of the time, if the rhythm is a reentry SVT, vagal maneuvers and/or AV nodal blocking agents will successfully convert the rhythm. And if the regular SVT was atrial flutter or atrial tach, then the same treatment measures will usually at least temporarily slow the rhythm enough to allow more definitive diagnosis.